6 on 2FM.
Thanks to the two Johnnies. It's Thursday, the 11th of May, and this is Game On. Coming up today, we've an All-Irish showdown in the Aviva to preview as Leinster take on Munster in Saturday's URC semi-final.
A worrying injury list from a Munster point of view. Conor Murray off HIA. Orgie Steinman off HIA. And Peter Manny off with an arm injury. And then Calvin Nash leaving the pitch as well. Unspecified injury towards the end of this game. But it sets up a semi-final of the competition against Leinster at the Aviva Stadium next week. So Connacht will be away to the Stormers in Cape Town. Two Irish teams, so three Irish teams. Sorry, Duncan Weir, I don't mean to spoil the night, the evening, but three Irish teams in the semi-final of the competition next weekend. But it's a big victory for Munster here at Scotstoun.
More on that with Keane Tracy in studio shortly, as well as Connacht's trip to South Africa to take on Stormers. We'll also take stock on basketball's health in Ireland with Basketball Ireland CEO John Feehan. In soccer, Rebecca Cray is here for a regular slot in the women's game. And in our Eye on America, we've Jeff Shepherd on bizarre betting in baseball and NFL's return to Europe. If you want to get in touch, you can text us on 51552 or tweet at GameOn2FM.
Game On on 2FM.
Now, welcome along. Keane Tracy of the Irish Independent is with me in studio. Keane, there's lots of rugby news today. Let's start with the news of Dave Kearney departing Leinster at the end of the season. It hasn't been confirmed where he's going to go. He has been largely linked with heading to America. He does have a very famous, is he uncle? Cousin?
Somewhere along the line, yeah.
Yeah, some American president has claimed him, all right. Huge servant to Leinster, and probably a little bit underrated. It's tough when you have a more famous big brother, I'd say, as well.
Yeah, that's it. Remarkable career when you kind of see it put in the numbers. I mean, 185 appearances and counting, I suppose, because he could be featuring again this weekend. Like, you don't play that many games for a team like Leinster unless you're pretty good. So an underrated career, you'd have to say. I actually thought he'd played more for Ireland than what he had when I looked at it. I think it was like something like 17 caps maybe, but he won a Six Nations. He was part of the 2015 World Cup squad. So he's done remarkably well, I'd say. And yeah, the talk is that he's going to be going over to America, Chicago maybe, I think I heard that it was. So if that is the case, then what a place to see out your career for the last couple of years. He's, like you said, Marie, he's been an unbelievable servant. He's been one of those guys who, you know, like in Leinster, we all know the strength and depth that they have. They have their elite, you know, Ireland internationals. They have the young guns coming through. But then they have the likes of Dave Kearney, Luke McGrath, Reese Ruddock, all these guys who keep the show on the road while the internationals are away. So he will leave a void. There's no doubt that they have the young talent coming through, but you need those kind of veterans as well to help those guys kind of smooth the transition. So he will be a loss, but an unbelievable servant.
Given the standard that's in the AIL now, and we saw it in the Terenure Clontarf final the other day, and so many players use it as a platform to go on and get professional careers, is there any way down?
To go back and play, yeah. You mean? Some players like to do it. Look, Sean O'Brien went back and he played with Nace. Obviously he couldn't play with Tullow because of that rule. He's just out of the professional game. But it's interesting. I think a guy like Dave Kearney would probably have more aspirations to probably earn a bit more money before he hangs up his boots. But yeah, the AL final the other day was incredible, really. 8,500 people. For the last few years, the standard of the AL final going back to, was it 2016 when Joey Carberry played for Clontarf against Corcon, has just been steadily rising and rising. I'd say the average age, I would imagine, of the players and the squads and even the supporters, you'd have to say, is going down. It's a bit like the League of Ireland, I think, at the moment, is becoming a bit more attractive, which is absolutely brilliant because it's the bedrock of Irish rugby. It's never going to be like the good old days where you had like packed out Lansdowne Roads. Like, I remember going to lots of those finals back in the day as well. It's never going to be like that again, but 8,500 is really, really good. Now, you'd have to say that was a credit to both Clontarf and Terenure because they're both fantastically well supported clubs. They've really tapped into the community, but it just shows, it goes to show the talent that's on show, because a couple of those guys were involved in provincial setups, like Harrison Brewer, the Terenure captain, was involved at Leinster. He played in New Zealand, he played in Japan. A guy like Cullum de Butler was in the Munster Academy. Caelan Dooley, who kicked 30 points, didn't quite get into the Munster Academy. He was behind Ben Healy in the Glenstall
Senior Cup team. When you saw how he was amazing at the weekend, like, what happens to him now? Will somebody pick him up?
I don't think so. I was chatting to him after the match. I was interviewing him, and he's from Newcastle West in Limerick, and he was saying that he might just go play Ga for the summer.
It's amazing.
Phenomenal. He was phenomenal. Like, I mean, when you have Ronan O'Gara tweeting about it, saying that it was one of the best performances he's ever seen, and a guy who's been through the mill in terms of, you know, holding your nerve as a kicker in finals, like all that trouble Rog had to go to before he reached the top. So it was remarkable, really. Maybe he will get picked up. Like, Rog was clearly watching her over in La Rochelle, which, you know, so he's scouting around looking for a kicker. So it was incredible, a great story. Like, this is what the AIL is all about. It's guys like this who didn't quite make the cut in the professional game, but they get to enjoy these special days out, and by all accounts are still celebrating Terran Uyghur anyway.
Yeah, so I heard. All right, and just in terms of how healthy it is, and I was listening to Eddie O'Sullivan on talking on the RTÉ podcast yesterday, and he was saying, you know, he predicted that it would die in the vine, and it very much hasn't.
Yeah, I think that the standard, so a few things have changed. I think in Munster, I think someone like Ian Costello coming back, who understands, was the academy manager, he understands, I think, the value of the AIL. He's come back, and just to use it as a Munster specific example, he's put a big emphasis on that. So Munster will have all the clips sent back from Division 1A games, some Division 1B games as well, and then Graham Rowntree and the head coaches will get to see them, and if they think that anyone deserves to come in to train, they absolutely will do that. And I know Leo Cullen, whenever he can, gets out and actually watches AIL games as well. So that's been a big shift as well, because, I mean, with the rate of injuries and that, you know, you could need to pull guys in. And pre-season especially, there's lots of guys who do get called up and they do get chances, and we've seen guys earn contracts on the back of that. Even someone like Conal Boomer, who came off the bench for Terran Uyghur, he played for Leinster against Chile back in November in that friendly, and obviously Chile are going to be at the World Cup for the first time, but a bit of a minnow, and Leinster put a score on them. But there's a guy who was called up to the Leinster squad on the back of what he was doing for Terran Uyghur. So that's the same across the board. I know it's the same in Connacht,
even
it's the
Dan
same
Sheehan
in Ulster.
I interviewed him today actually, and he was talking about the AIL final and his own experiences and how he was able to use it as a springboard to get his contract, and then obviously it escalated very quickly for him, but it just shows
there's a good chance that, like, someone, like, it's a great example, like someone like Dan Sheehan could have slipped through the cracks, because he didn't make it into the Leinster Academy initially. He went off and he played with Trinity under Tony Smeath, absolutely outstanding. He was tempted over to Lansdowne, then worked under Mike Ruddock, and he was outstanding there, and all of a sudden Leo Cullen couldn't ignore him. So that just goes to show you that there is always room for a late developer, and someone like a Caden Dooley, for sure. I mean, he's only 23, same age as Ben Healy, so he didn't get a chance to kick, like I was saying, in the Senior Cup final because he was stuck behind him. But he's actually saying they didn't go on to win it the following year, but he was the kicker then because Ben Healy had left the school. He was a year ahead of him. So there's all these brilliant stories, and, you know, the programme is obviously, you know, the what it's all about in terms of Irish rugby, but so many of us and lots of the listeners will know the background of the stories of most of the players at this age, where in the AIL it's just such an untapped resource of absolutely brilliant stories.
Yeah, and just you mentioned Terran Uyghur, and they're still celebrating, but I'm down around there quite a bit, and they're great for giving back to the club as well. So the senior players will often take training sessions with the younger lads. They'll go in and talk to them. They'll present them jerseys before their tours, and I'm sure they're going in and out to the school as well. It's there's great connection between from the top down, which isn't often the case. So look, fair play to them. It was a great game, and they deserve to enjoy every bit of it. Just one more thing before we move on. We will be previewing the two URC semi-finals in a little bit later with Cian, but we're just going to get through the news first. And the Sevens, Cian, a big weekend for them, hoping for Olympic qualification, and this weekend is crucial in Toulouse.
It's huge for the women. The men are trying to make up a little bit of ground, but the women could actually secure Olympic qualification this weekend in Toulouse, which would be amazing. I think they're in fifth at the moment, and the top four teams go through automatically, but because France are in the top four, they're obviously the host nation, so they're guaranteed a place, which would mean fifth place would be enough for Ireland. Now obviously they'd want to push on and make sure of it even more, but yeah, like it's kind of interesting, I suppose, on the back of the disappointment of the women's Six Nations, the Sevens kind of comes back into the forefront, and it kind of went unnoticed because of everything that was going on in the women's Six Nations. But the women's Sevens head coach Aidan McNulty left his position last month as well. So that's two, you know, of the head coaches in the women's game gone in the last few weeks, really. So look, it's huge, I think, for, you know, I think it's been such a tough time for women's rugby, and this is a massive chance. It's not the same because, like, obviously sevens is different, and, you know, it's still trying to play catch up in terms of popularity in the country. But we're going to see all the players who many rugby supporters would have loved to have seen during the Six Nations. So your Baby and Parfitts, your Amy Lee Murphy Crowe, your Lucy Mulhall, Stacey Flood, all these players who undoubtedly would have made a big difference to Ireland's Six Nations campaign. But look, that's in the past. They're on a massive journey towards qualifying for the Olympics. And if they were to get there, what an achievement it would be. So huge opportunity this weekend. They've got a tough pool draw. They're playing France and Australia, I think. But they're good enough to go and get it done, I think.
Okay, we'll be keeping an eye on that. And just then, there was a women's rugby briefing yesterday. Lots came out of it. Key points for you, Cian?
I suppose the things that came out of it, yes, Greg McWilliams was, you know, a mutual decision that that's why he was left go. It seems like there's going to be another restructuring of the AIL competition, which, you know, has been a big issue in terms of trying to ensure that the players are test match ready, and clearly we saw that a lot of them, being honest about it, weren't throughout the Six Nations, which is, I would say, no fault of their own. The RFU have clearly, like, what is it, 6.43 million, I think it is, that they're pumping into the women's game. I think Kevin Potts, since he's come in, has definitely been like really positive, I think, about the women's game. And I think, you know, you had Gillian McDarby there, you had Fiona Steed, you've got plenty of women's representation now. So, look, as Dave, the tone of it yesterday was the only way is up, and that's the, I suppose, the grim reality of the situation. But you would just hope that whatever club structures are put in place, that they're agreed upon across the board, because if we're at a stage where this time next year we're going into the Six Nations on a similarly, you'd say, unprepared front, then a wooden spoon could be on the cards again. I think they were saying 4 to 5 years Ireland could be competing with France and England. That's optimistic, I would say. I hope it's true, but there's a lot of work to get there, to be challenging on the likes of England and France. You see at Twickenham for the last game, was it 60,000 people they had? So a lot of work to get there, but the soundings were certainly positive. Hopefully it can be put into action now, though.
Okay, Cian, stay with us. We'll get to those URC semi-finals a little bit later on, but we're going to turn our attention to basketball now, and I'm delighted to say that Basketball Ireland CEO John Feehan joins us. John, you're with us in the wake of the launch of your 5-year strategic plan. I know you said at the time that people involved in basketball can be very excited about the direction the sport is heading in. What direction is that? Tell us.
I mean, up is a simple answer. It's really positive at the moment. Like, for instance, to give you some indication, 5 years ago we had about 24,000 club participants in terms of registered players and administrators. This year is 37,000, so that'll give you some idea the level of growth, and all the indications are that we'll see significant growth again next year as well.
That is phenomenal growth, and I'd say there's other sports looking on now in awe of you being able to get so many participants involved. What do you put it down to?
Well, there's a number of things. I think it is a fantastic sport to start with, and it always was. But I think more laterally, people have, through the COVID experience, which really shut down our sport for some time, I think people realise just how much they missed it. And also, we've had a number of developments within the sport in terms of how we've promoted the sport through, we have a new OTT platform, we have a live statistics app. There's a whole heap of different initiatives, if you like, which have, I think, gone a long way to making it more in your face and something that people can identify with very quickly.
In terms of accessibility, and often when it comes to people wanting to join clubs, the facilities aren't there to cater for everybody. Do you have enough facilities, coaches, referees, officials, the people that you need to facilitate this growth?
Well, to be honest, with the level of growth we've had, it is a challenge. There's no doubt about it. But we have plans in place over the next 5 years to make sure that we have sufficient coaches, referees, table officials, all that kind of thing. One of the big challenges, of course, is the facilities, because as you're probably aware, most basketball clubs don't own their own premises. But that's something that we're working with government. We're working with a number of different bodies to facilitate more access.
And what about clubs? Are there enough clubs for all the kids that want to join?
Yeah, we're continually, we'd 7 new clubs this year, and we'd probably have another 7 before the year is out. So the reality is the clubs are there. We have ambitious plans over the next while for a number of extra clubs. But I think as much as extra clubs, it's also extra facilities for the clubs that are there, because I think most of the clubs have almost waiting lists of kids to get in, which is one of the big issues for us.
Yeah, that's definitely the case. And I mean, it's probably a good way to be, because you've got so much demand, but at the same time, you want to be able to cater for the demand, or the kids will go and find something else to do.
Yeah, it's about planning, really. Mm. And I think we are planning in quite a bit of detail now over the next couple of years. And I think we're hoping to ensure that we have sufficient facilities to allow more kids in and more kids to play this sport, and indeed grow the adult population as well. So, for instance, we had three Masters tournaments this year. There was one with 500 participants in Galway, for instance, and that's fantastic.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, the social side of it can be brilliant. One thing I've noticed is that I suppose it's one of those sports that you can just go and play with your pals, and it doesn't have to be an organised game, and you can it's actually enjoyable playing on your own. But just the informal nature of basketball is really appealing. If you have a hoop and a little bit of ground, you can play away. But would there be any plans to put up little courts anywhere in parks? Because often you see them putting in the gym equipment and things like that, and I always think that a little basketball area, even if it's for 3x3, would really complement areas.
It's starting to happen. We are in discussions with a number of local authorities and that kind of thing, so it's really a case of adding to the facilities through that means, if you like. But yeah, I think there's no doubt at all that, as you said, it's an easy sport to attempt to play, because it's a bit like soccer. You don't need a lot of space. You don't need a specialist ground to do it on. You don't, you know, it's just one person on the ball can play a little bit of basketball, and two or three makes it more interesting.
If there was one hoop outside myself and Keane Tracy, there would be shooting a few of them before we come in.
Well, it's very easy, isn't it?
Yeah, you know? It is.
And it doesn't take a lot of space as well. It's just fantastic, you know?
Yeah, we have one in our front garden, and even today, one of the neighbours, who's an adult, my son was shooting hoops, he's 10. The neighbour came in, who was in his 30s, and the two of them were just shooting hoops.
Like, across the road here in UCD, for instance, they have a lovely basketball court up beside where the students are, and it's all about social basketball. And there's a half court as well for the 3x3 version. And the amount, I regularly walk the grounds there, and I always see kids and students just hanging around and playing a bit of basketball. It's fantastic. You know, it really is a very social element to it.
Even where I live, where I'm from, in Six Mile Bridge, it's a small village, and, you know, it's very much a GAA parish. But when I was down last summer, they have a outdoor two hoops and a bit of tarmac, and there was kids from, I'd say they were Filipino kids, and I'd never seen them before, and they're coming in and they're playing away. And a few of the local kids that I would know would came into the court and playing away, and it just seemed to be so diverse and inclusive.
Absolutely. That's one thing we're extremely proud of, is the fact that our gender balance is pretty well 50-50, and we do represent modern Ireland. I mean, it's every shade, every diverse religion. Take it whatever way you like it. We represent it. And, you know, there's 79 countries represented within our playing group. So that's fantastic.
And then, I suppose, look, another great thing is that you can turn on the television or turn on the YouTube in the mornings and get all the highlights from the NBA, or sit down and watch an NBA game and, you know, see your LeBrons and your Steph Currys.
Absolutely.
And watch your Air documentaries, whatever you want. Like, there's such global promotion of the game as well.
Well, after soccer, it's the second biggest sport in the world. So in that respect, it's a very, very major sport, and it's in every country. And so no matter where you look, but you're right. I mean, across Europe, in fact, there's some fantastic basketball taking place in the likes of Spain and in Germany, in Italy, in Turkey. But you're right. I mean, America is obviously a beacon, and it certainly gets lots of attention and, you know, encourages kids to go out and play.
Yeah, they do their marketing really well, because after the NBA games, they put up like 5-minute highlight packages on YouTube, and they're so easy to get, and kids don't sit down and watch long anything anymore. So they'll put on the YouTube, watch the highlights, see the big stars, and then they're done and they're
absolutely
happy. And it's,
well, we have an association with them, with the Junior NBA, which takes place across Ireland, and we have 30 schools then end up in the National Arena to play off, and that's all. They bring in one of the NBA people, or one of the former NBA people, and it's a great occasion for the kids. That's primary school level.
Yeah, and even as well, I feel like it's all very positive today. I mean, it's such a rare thing to be talking about so many positives. But the National League, the top level, seems to be growing as well, and the interest and the promotion of it, and just, it's kind of hitting the consciousness a lot more, I feel, in the last few years.
Well, I think for the first time this year now, all of our international as well as our National League Cup finals. We've had our league finals first time on national television with TG Cahir, and they've been fantastic partners. But in addition to that, we introduced the OTT platform where we've shown over 650
games. So that's streaming, games. Is it?
That's streaming on basketball.tv. So it's fantastic in that respect. We're giving access to all of those games for anybody who chooses to look at it. And we've had over 300,000 plays on it this year alone.
You have your National Arena. Is there plans to develop that in time? It feels like Absolutely. It's been there for a long time.
It's actually 30 years old today.
Nearly as old as myself and Cian.
Well, no comment. Anyway, it does need a little bit of development. But that being said, when it's full, it's just rocking. It's a really great place, and the atmosphere in there is second to none. And I've been to many, many big sporting occasions, and it's as good as any of them, to be brutally honest. But it does need development. There's no doubt about it, and that's what we'll be doing over the next 5 years.
So, what are the big challenges that you face then?
I mean, the big challenges are good ones, actually. To be honest, it's controlling and managing growth. That's one of the main issues that we have to face up to. And as you said a little earlier on, you've got to make sure you have enough coaches, enough referees, enough table officials, enough facilities for people to play it in. We want to make sure that our international program is funded properly, which we're beginning to do in a serious way. We're in Eurobasket, which is the European top for the European international sides in Europe. It's the top tier. So we're in that for both the men and women. So we have a great program ahead for basketball in Ireland. And I think that's one of the reasons why it will grow. But at the end of the day, the priorities are really just to make sure that we have the pathways there for all the kids to get through and play the and enjoy the sport and grow it across the country. I mean, next to GAA, it's probably the most, our soccer, it's the next most diverse sport across the country in terms of, there's always a club or a school very close to you anywhere in Ireland.
Yeah, there seems to be always be a great relationship with the schools. A lot of the halls, you see games on in school halls regularly. Is that something that you've always tapped into?
I think so, yeah. I mean, as I said earlier on, it's a great sport for, like, it particularly appeals to girls, I think, because obviously it's safe, it's warm, it's in a cold, wet, dark winter's night. It kind of appeals somewhat more to maybe being out in the cold and wet.
And parents
may add too. Yes, it's a very safe sport too, which is the other thing too. So to that extent, it's fit for growth in a big way, and it's in a good place going forward. And you're right about the positives. There's a lot of positives about it. But you ask what the issues are. It's the managing the growth to make sure that all the various cogs work as you go through the process.
All right. Well, that all sounds good, John Fian. We'll see now in another 5 years if you come back to us. Let us know how it all goes, because it does feel like it's all moving in the right direction. Anyway, a lot of positivity around basketball in Ireland, and long may it continue. Thank you so much for coming in. We're going to take a very quick break, but do stay with us. We have Rebecca Craig to preview all of the women's football this weekend. Cian is going to look at the two URC games, and we also have our Eye on America, Jeff Shepherd. And I'm going to play the ads in about 1 second now.
Game on 2FM.
Hi, welcome back. Cian Tracy is still with me here in studio. We're going to look ahead to the URC semi-finals, Connacht and Stormers and Munster and Leinster. It feels like there's a little bit of unpredictability about these games for once. Well, one of them.
I would say both, to be fair. Yeah, I think so.
Checking myself there, you know?
Yeah, no, I think so. I suppose like the big unknown, and we'll find out at midday tomorrow, is what kind of team Leinster are going to name. I think the expectation is that it will be much changed, obviously, with the Champions Cup final to come next week. But it'll be very interesting to see if it's like 15 changes. I don't know if it'll quite be that many, because I think Leo Cullen will be conscious of the fact that there are certain players who will need game time. I mean, you have guys like James Lowe and Robbie Henshaw who were supposed to be stepping up their recoveries from injuries this week. If they were good to go, you'd imagine he'd be keen to get some minutes into their legs after not having played for a few weeks. But at the same time, it is such a risk. Like, I mean, this time last year, in terms of the URC semi-final, Leinster lost to the Bulls, but it actually came the week after the Champions Cup final, so it was a little different. So this is the week before, so if it had been the week after, I think you'd see a much stronger team. And even during the Sharks game last weekend, Hugo Keenan, who never gets injured, went down after about 5 minutes, and he ran it off and he was fine. But I could imagine up in the coaching box, Stuart Lancaster and Leo Cullen were going, like, we just can't really afford to be without him for the Champions Cup final. And that's not to be given disrespect to Munster, I don't think it is at all, but I think if Leinster were being honest, they're never going to admit this publicly, but they measure their success off the Champions Cup. They haven't won it since 2018. They lost the final last year. They've been beaten by La Rochelle in the last two seasons, so this feels like there's a sense of destiny around Leinster this season, but I think people are writing off La Rochelle far too quickly. So that's from the Leinster side of things. As I said, it'll be very interesting to see the team, and like let's be honest, whatever team they name, it's going to be really, really strong. We've seen that across the course of however many years. So from a Munster point of view, like, as Michael Corcoran, you played the clip at the start of the show, it was just such a costly victory in Glasgow last weekend in terms of the injury toll. They're definitely going to be without four starters due to HIAs, and I would say a couple of key players in there who you could really ill afford to be without going up against Leinster, particularly someone like Orji Snyman, who just can't catch a break. But you saw in the couple of games that he played in South Africa, you know, that he still looks like the player of old, which is remarkable, really, having had back-to-back ACL injuries. So look, he's had two head injuries in the space of a few weeks, so obviously they're going to take all the precautions necessary with him. Peter O'Mahony, they're hopeful that he'll play. He took a limited part in training. Again, we'll see at midday tomorrow if he'll be fit or not, and Dear McBaron is the same. So I was down in Limerick on, it was a Tuesday, at their press conference at Thomond Park, and the mood is definitely, like, optimistic down there. I mean, sometimes I don't really like the phrase of a free shot, because, like, it's still a semi-final, you know, there's no such thing.
I thought when I heard people saying it about this game.
I think it's, again, not to be disrespectful to Connacht, but I think Connacht themselves would probably admit they're in bonus territory. For Munster, of course, they've had a tricky season, but Munster supporters expect them to be challenging for trophies. So even though this season was a bit of a transition, they've probably exceeded expectations. But now that they're in a semi-final, they want to go and win it, of course. So it's just a shame that they're going to be without so many key players, because this is a good time to play Leinster. Mm-hmm. Like I said, a week before a Champions Cup final, there's no way it's going to be their first choice 15. No matter what team it is, I just can't see it being a full choice team. So that's disappointing, I suppose, from a Munster fan's point of view. But like I said, the move down in Limerick on Tuesday was quite optimistic. I think they've worked really hard to develop their squad depth, and so much of that has come from Graham Rowntree and Mike Prendergast and Dennis Leamy trusting younger players, and we've seen the likes of Shane Daly and Calvin Nash absolutely thriving. So that means that I think there's a little bit more depth than they would have had before, so they're more covered than they would have been, I'd say, this time last year, in terms of having guys like, you think of someone like Finian Witcherly, who you'd imagine might start instead of Orji Snyman in the second row with Sean Klein. He's been outstanding for the last couple of weeks, so they're optimistic. You know, the Aviva has not been a happy hunting ground, neither has Dublin. Like, Leinster, it's just been a bit of a mental barrier for them over the last few years. So the pressure will still be on Leinster. I think it's a cut capacity of 29,000. The last I heard, it was going to be a bit of a struggle, I think, to hit that 29,000. I think on Tuesday or Wednesday, they'd sold about 20,000. So it's a bit disappointing, you know, that a Munster Leinster game, we were talking about the AIL and not being kind of like the good old days. It's a bit disappointing that a Munster Leinster game in a semi-final of a URC, which is now better than ever with the South African teams, isn't going to have a heaving crowd. But you'd imagine whoever will be there will make for a great atmosphere. And it's kind of, I suppose it's difficult from like Leinster fans' point of view anyway, that they have so many games with the Aviva, cost a lot of money, not everyone is from Dublin, and then it's the same thing for Munster fans, the cost in terms of coming up if you wanted to stay over. So I still think it'll be a cracking occasion. It's still Munster Leinster at the end of the day, but it won't be the full cast that you would have liked to have seen for a game of this magnitude.
Let's hear from the Munster forwards coach Andy Kariakou about the prospect of beating Leinster.
Look, you know, it'd be a huge experience for them, absolutely. We've pushed hard this week in terms of the learnings that we've taken from Glasgow, and we're just trying to consistently get better with our players. And this experience at the weekend, you know, is something I'm sure will help them grow and develop and put the squad and the team in the best position possible moving forward.
It's quite interesting just even hearing the narrative around Munster and that success for them would be if they get a good performance. But surely if you're a Munster player, success is getting into the final.
Well, try telling someone like Peter O'Mahony that, you know, who's the Munster captain. So I think Munster supporters, we've chatted about this before, Marie, throughout the season. I think Munster supporters are realistic in their expectations. If you think back to, you know, the really tricky start that they had to the season, it wasn't looking good. And I mean, another period of transition, but then they pulled it back around. They had another little bit of a dip. The Champions Cup last 16 defeat to the Sharks was pretty damaging, you would have thought, and then they had to go back to South Africa, but they ended up rescuing their season pretty much because they beat the Stormers, who were obviously the URC champions, and then they drew with the Sharks a week later, having been absolutely hammered by them just a few weeks earlier. So that meant that they got Champions Cup qualification, which was absolutely huge. Whatever about winning a trophy this season, if Munster had been playing in the Challenge Cup next year, it would have been a disaster really, because not only are guys who want to put their hand up for international selection going to be playing at a lower level and at a huge disadvantage playing in Europe second tier, it also would have hit the attendances. Like, we're talking about Munster and Leinster this weekend. If Munster were playing, I don't know, Brive or some lower level French team next season at Thomond Park, you'd struggle to fill that out. So it's absolutely massive in terms of the finances and things like that that Munster got Champions Cup rugby. And that definitely, I think, lifted a weight off their shoulders. They went to Glasgow last weekend on the back of a really successful 2 weeks in South Africa and played really well. The defence came in for a huge amount of credit, and you know, they did defend unbelievably well, but I would sort of ask the question, why were they defending for so long against 14 players for most of the game? You know, they made it a little bit difficult for themselves at times, but look, they got through it. Like I said, it was a heavy injury toll, but I think they'll take a huge amount of confidence from the last three or four results, particularly because they've been away from home. So you think they went to Cape Town, they went to Durban, and they went to Glasgow, where Glasgow hadn't been beaten in Scotstoun in a long, long time. So that's three games on the road that they can bank in terms of the experience going to the Aviva this weekend, because like I said, it hasn't been a happy hunting ground for them the last God knows how long.
So Connacht and the Stormers, Connacht, you say, would probably feel like they're in bonus territory, but still nobody really gave them much of a chance against Ulster. They got the job done there. Surely they'd want to keep getting it done. But
yeah, absolutely. They are in bonus territory. I think they'd be honest about saying that as well. They had a really difficult start in terms of the fixtures. They were on the road a lot because if you remember, the new 5G pitch or 4G pitch at the sports ground wasn't ready in time. So they opted then to play a lot of games away from home. So they were behind the eight ball from very early on. But similarly to Munster, they pulled it back. They scraped into the playoffs and they were really good last week. I was up in Belfast for that game last Friday night, and it was actually kind of similar to Munster the following night. They made life difficult for themselves. Like, Munster and Connacht both should have won their respective quarter finals by much more than what they did. Like, Connacht were quite wasteful in the 22, but if you're taking the glass half full approach, which Connacht did, and they were absolutely right to, they put themselves into positions to score them, and they know that they're not going to be as sloppy again. I suppose the difficult thing is the Stormers are going to be much better than Ulster were. Ulster were really disappointing last Friday, especially at home. So Connacht left on Tuesday. They arrived in Cape Town yesterday on Wednesday, and their week, you know, they're kind of, Andy Friend is I think an ideal kind of man in these situations, because lots of other teams could have bemoaned the fact that, you know, they're on the road to South Africa, like, oh, woe is me, and they only have a certain amount of business class seats. I think they had five or something, I think I heard him saying five business class seats, so they went to the five biggest players. Yeah. So I can imagine there was lads trying to eat a little bit more to make sure they were getting in them for the long trip to South Africa.
What was the team that tweeted the picture from the plane and they were
was it the Lions? I think yeah. Like,
really,
but that's the reality of, I mean, it's fine for me getting onto like, you know, a long haul flight in the seats down the back, but for these enormous guys, like, it is really tricky. And that's not kind of, you know, like a sense of entitlement or being like privileged in terms of like their position. It actually is
practical.
It's really difficult. So, but Connacht are looking at it, you know, as this is a massive opportunity for him to go, and you know, no one's going to expect him to win. The Stormers are going to be under all the pressure. They're the URC champions, but Connacht have shown a tendency to upset the odds throughout this season, so I'm fascinated to see how they get on, because the hard track, I think, over there will suit them as well.
Okay, but let's hear from Connacht's Finlay Beelam and whether 2016 will motivate them in South Africa.
We're a really focused group. We We know the challenge that's ahead of us this Saturday. And look, 2016 was bloody a long time ago now. And we've got a really great bunch of coaches and players here. And they know the big game that it's going to be this weekend. And I think it's, like what I said earlier, it's, you know, you recognise the occasion that it is. It's going to be a semi-final in South Africa against the defending champions. Like, lads don't need any extra motivation for that, you know. And, yeah, like I said before, play the game, not the occasion. We'll do our thing and come up with a good game plan, and it's on us to deliver it.
Finley Beelam there, speaking to the media. So, Cian, give us a prediction for both games.
Oh, it's so hard for the Munster-Leinster game before. I'd love to see the Leinster team. But look, Leinster is so difficult to beat at home. Munster's record is poor in Dublin. It's poor against Leinster. So like logic would suggest that Leinster would win. But I wouldn't write Munster off, particularly without having seen the Leinster team. Connacht, look, it's going to be really difficult for Connacht. But they definitely have a chance. But you'd imagine it could be a Stormers, maybe Leinster final back at the Aviva the week after the Champions Cup final. But it would be brilliant to see Connacht go over and cause another upset. And like I said, you know, they're playing for... It could be Andy Friend's last game. It could have been Andy Friend's last game last week, and they pulled it out of the bag. So it would be an unbelievable way to send him off on a high before he goes back home to Australia. He's just done such a brilliant job at Connacht.
Okay, Cian Tracy, thank you so much for coming in. We're going to take a very quick break. Rebecca Cray is standing by and will also be looking at all of the US sports.
Game on 2FM.
Welcome back. Rebecca Cray is with me in studio to talk all things football. Rebecca, we had the second semi-final in the Champions League, first legs, of course. Inter Milan beating AC Milan 2-0. Could have been a lot more. It was one of those games, the occasion looked amazing, the fans, the colour. Probably wasn't really buoyed by the football, though.
Yeah, most definitely. I think they're the kings of the ultra section, to be honest, which is absolutely fantastic. Electric atmosphere. But yeah, I think it was unlike the game the night before. You know, it was very much a case of all Inter in the first half. They flew out the blocks. A bit of a Premier League throwback with Dzeko and Mkhitaryan scoring for Inter. And it was just a case of mere strength from Dzeko to get the first goal. High press just caused AC Milan the trouble from the get-go. You know, allowed Inter playing behind as well for the second. With Mkhitaryan coming in to follow and finish really well. But yeah, look, it just wasn't one of those games for AC Milan. They just didn't finish, you know, how they should have. Came into it a little bit in the second half, just weren't clinical in front of goal. But yeah, look, it makes for a decent second leg, but we'll see.
Yeah, it's hard to not see Inter getting to that final. The question probably will be who's going to join them, and we'll find out next week. Lots of other football going on. Vera Pauw was speaking to the media yesterday. The World Cup trophy is on tour. It was in Dublin. Great scenes. Lots of little girls looking at the trophy. Abby Larkin was there doing a bit of press herself. Vera wasn't impressed with the European Clubs Association's directive that players should only be released for international duty 10 days before the Women's World Cup begins. So the tournament is starting on July 20th until August 20th. And the club's body is arguing that players should be afforded rest beforehand because of the compressed window for some players after the tournament. They're going to return to domestic action. But Pau says that this will not protect the players. It's going to put them in a very unsafe and dangerous position. The release date for the players is the 10th of July. A lot of them won't have played for a while. She said we could see a lot of injuries if they don't get to prepare properly for the tournament. She was really strong in it. You could tell she feels really strongly about it. What are your thoughts, Rebecca?
Yeah, I could tell by looking at her. Like, she was waiting for that question to come. Yeah. You know, she's quite highly strung by it. Look, she does have a point. You know, she's kind of waited. I think the country has waited for an opportunity like this to go to a major tournament and prepare as best as possible. I know the ECA, you know, obviously with Ireland, it's obviously aimed at the likes of Katie McCabe, you know, the Liverpool girls, you know, one or two or a few are at Birmingham as well. You know, you can understand where the ECA are coming from. Is it a kind of pressurised decision, you know, with the fact that the English team have a number of injuries, you know, a few others throughout Europe as well? Could something like this, you know, have been decided long before now? You know, I think something should have been in place, you know, long before now in terms of player welfare, you know, and scheduling. I don't know if it's the right time, you know, with the World Cup so close as well, but you know, you can see it from both sides. But you know, Vera has, you know, she said, what, it's 11 weeks from when some girls may have played, you know, to the World Cup. So you do want that good preparation coming into a major tournament as well.
Sharpness and fitness would be crucial.
Yes, most definitely.
Especially when you're playing Australia in front of 80,000 fans. Exactly. You want to have all your wits about you. It's going to come a time soon, though, that she's going to have to start picking players. We saw at the weekend Niamh Fahey and Leanne Kiernan back from injury. It's close enough, though.
I don't think I'd like to be in Vera's shoes, to be honest with you, right now, with those two come back in, you know, and of Savannah McCarthy as well has come back
playing
in
midfield.
With it. Exactly, the holding role there. You know, she's a lot of kind of, I suppose, question marks over her squad selection. It's going to be a very interesting few weeks, and obviously the games with Zambia and France to come as well, it might give her a fair idea of who she's going to bring in a finalised squad. But yeah,
I know, it's not that we matter, but you know, it'd be nice to
Those five sides might fare you well, Emery. But it's definitely going to be a difficult decision for her, but look, hopefully she makes the right ones.
I think it's just horrendous because some of those women that don't get to go are not going to get another chance.
Heartbreaking.
So you have to tell people that their dream is over.
Yeah.
Like the pain of even thinking about that, it must be the worst part of the job, to get a team to where they are and then to have to tell some players that they can't go.
Definitely.
It's going to be really difficult. I'm sure there'll be some on standby and all the rest, but it's really, really hard. The Women's National League this weekend gone, so win for Bowes over Sligo, another win for Galway, beat Treaty 1-0. Shells beat Athlone, very low scoring, bar Shamrock Rovers, five goals against Cork City. Wexford beat DLR. It's really tight on that table now. Piemont and Galway United on 19 points, Shamrock Rovers 18, Shelburne 16, Bowes 15, Athlone be disappointed 13, moving along down. Even Wexford on 12, been difficult for Sligo Rovers there near the bottom, but there's no one running away with it, which is exactly what you want, Rebecca.
Yeah, most definitely. Like, I think I say it year on year, you know, every season it's just going to be a wide open league. I think the biggest surprise is probably Galway for everybody. Mm-hmm. You know, they've crept through there. It's always been, since the start of the league, I think it's been, you know, Piemont and Raheny when it was, Shelburne, you know, Wexford, obviously most recently Athlone now. But Galway are just riding that wave. And look, they're doing really well. And they're really dogged team, you know, and thankfully they've got goal scorers now in the likes of Jenna Slattery and Lindsay McKee is still doing really well, you know, for let's say an older player in the league. Wide open. Rovers again maintaining that unbeaten run. And obviously Piemont going well at top. You know, Shells obviously scraped that win against Athlone in the final minutes last weekend as well. And look, they just haven't got a hold of consistent good runs, you know, still getting decent results, but they'll be looking to capitalise again this season or this weekend.
Yeah, so the Athlone Shamrock Rovers playing now this weekend, Saturday at 7 o'clock in Athlone. That could be an interesting one. I mean, Shamrock Rovers are going to have to lose at some stage, you'd think, you know. And Athlone, look, for me anyway, that's probably the game of the weekend. Wexford and Bowes maybe as well.
Yeah, it is. I think Athlone is the one for me there. I've probably been watching to see how Rovers get on against all the top teams and inverted commas, you know. And obviously this will be the first, I'm near sure, against Athlone for this season. So it'll be interesting to see how they travel. You know, you don't know what could happen in Athlone. It's just one of those places like Galway you go to, and you know, the crowd are constantly on your back. Again, Wexford Bowes would be a tough affair, you know, they're quite physical teams. So that'll be an interesting one as well, but yeah, we'll see.
Women's FA Cup final this weekend as well. Chelsea and Man United, rivals for the league, rivals now for the FA Cup. Should be a cracker.
Most definitely. Like, first time there for Man United. You know, if Chelsea win, it's their straight, I think their third straight FA Cup win. Quite tight at the top of the WSL as well between the two. You know, I think it'd be the two of them fighting it out till the end. So, can't
just
wait for
one
that.
One point between them, 50-49 so far. But, like, Chelsea have always been there. It's been some season for Man United.
Fantastic. You know, they've obviously built on, since they came in, 5 years ago now? They've just built and built and built, and they're doing really well. You know, obviously the likes of Arsenal have fallen away slightly. Can't be helped with the injuries they've had. City just hasn't been a season for them. You know, they've done well for a few years at the top, but it's all Chelsea, Man United now, and, you know, I'm looking forward to kickoff on Sunday.
Man United have a game in hand against Chelsea, so I wonder when they are going to play each other now in the next while, because that would be
I think United played City, that'll be their next game, then Liverpool, but Chelsea have got Arsenal still to play.
Okay.
So it'll be an interesting end.
Is around the end of May. That's going to be one worth following for sure.
Most definitely.
Rebecca, thank you so much for coming in.
Cheers, Marie.
And of course, West Ham are in action tonight as well in Europe. Right, we're going to take a break. Jeff Shepherd to come.
Game on 2FM.
Welcome along. I'm delighted to say that Jeff Shepherd joins us with all of the news stateside. Shep, I know we're going to talk about betting in sport in a second, but I do want to start with the NFL. They're announcing the schedule tonight. I'm going to New York in November, and it is game week the weekend that I'm there. And all I'm thinking of is, am I going to see Aaron Rodgers and the Jets play? So I'm waiting now for the schedule to come out. What time? How long more have I to wait?
We've got a couple more hours. What's interesting, Marie, is it's just things have been kind of leaking out all week, you know? And so I think the Packers' full schedule's already been announced, you know, like, or been leaked, I should say.
Yeah.
So the official announcements are coming out.
Okay.
Starting tonight, but the Chiefs and the Lions are going to play to open the season on Thursday night. And the big thing for our story, you know, for our broadcast is there's going to be five games in Europe this year. They're going to do back to back to back in London to start the month of October. So they're going to have three weekends in a row in London in between Wembley and the Hotspur Stadium. And then in November, they're going to play back to back weeks in Frankfurt, Germany, including a game with the Chiefs over there. And again, you know, we've talked about this a lot, Marie. I think this is all just testing the waters on, you know, consecutive weeks. And is there a fan base that will go to these games every week to eventually put a team, you know, in one of these cities? I think that's just another way to test all this out.
Yeah, it looks to be heading that way for sure. And Germany's interesting as well, because I know that the NFL is huge in Germany, but I don't know why.
Well, I think a big part of it is, you know, there's a very large, you know, U.S. Army base there.
That's it. I knew there was something.
You know, yeah. My German geography isn't as good as it probably was when I was studying World War II, but I'm not exactly sure how far Ramstein is from Frankfurt, but I do think that's probably a big part of it.
Okay. Now, we'll talk about this next week. We'll see if I'm going to be going to see Aaron Rodgers and the Jets in November. Hopefully I will. I've got to wait for another few hours. Let's talk about the betting that is happening in college sports. It seems there's something going on, Shep.
Yeah. You know, look, we've legalized sports betting in the States a couple of years ago. And, you know, it's been wildly popular. The ratings of all sporting events are up. Just in the last week, we have seen the University of Alabama fire their baseball coach for betting against his own team, which that's kind
you
of
can't
a new
do that.
One. Yeah, yeah, no, you really can't do that. That's, you know, and the thing, Marie, is, you know, college baseball is not it's not like March Madness or college football where you've got thousands of people all over the country betting thousands and hundreds of thousands of dollars every weekend. College baseball's, you know, much smaller than that, and they were tipped off by some suspicious betting, and just the fact that there was a very large wager placed on Alabama to lose right after they announced that they were going to be changing their pitcher. So it was almost like insider trading when it comes to stocks, you know. And then Iowa and Iowa State University both announced they've had players that they are looking into that are betting on other sports. They don't believe any of those players bet on their teams, but basically what it boils down to is if you're an athlete, you really shouldn't be betting on any sport whatsoever. They're really trying to avoid any you know, looks of impropriety. And so this is kind of just the tip of the iceberg. I don't think this is going to be anything that's going away anytime soon. We'll see how many of these players get suspended and for how long. You know, it'll all depend on how much money they bet.
Okay, sounds fascinating, Shep. Thank you, as always, for joining us. That is all we have time for this evening, but do tune in tomorrow. Shane will be here previewing all of the weekend sports. Thank you very much, Rebecca, for being here as well. Betta De Silva is up next.